I would call it a layered show to start the week on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. We got the start of the second round. We got a look back to the first round. Bob Stauffer from the Edmonton Oilers is going to join us, talk about what happened with Edmonton falling in an earlier fashion than we've been used to the last couple of years, and what their priority might be going forward. But also the Edmonton Oilers losing the spotlight to the likes of the Toronto Maple Leafs right now, who hire Matt Sundin and John Chyka to lead them out of the next stage of their organization.
I don't know what to make of it. You know, Matt's is called the senior executive advisor. So I don't know what responsibility.
A lot of words there.
It's a big business card. You know, it might take two, front and back. To me, is that a grooming situation? Are you trying to teach Mats how to be the president of a hockey club at this point? I do think if you were to bring Mats back, this is probably the right place to do it, and or the right position to do it, rather, because he's not ready to be the president of a hockey club. He just isn't. When you think of the layers of responsibilities on the business side, on the hockey side.
He hasn't been around it for 17 years.
Not very much. You're right. And so that's why if you're going to bring him back at this. The John Chyka one to me is, quite honestly, is baffling. I don't understand it.
Because of how John left Arizona, or the fact that John hasn't been involved in hockey for a few years, or that there should have been other people in the mix that were not in the mix?
I think all of the above, Darren. I think that, you know, this is John Chyka that's going to have to deal with other managers on a daily basis for the hockey club. And after what he went through in Arizona, you know, the first thing in this, and it let's face it, it is a club. There's 32 of the guys in the club. Can he be viewed as trustworthy? Is that an issue for him? He's going to have to work hard to regain the trust of his peers based on what he did in Arizona with the tampering and with the way he managed testing some of the players before the draft that cost Arizona two draft picks. So from that perspective, that's one. The other thing is that, you know, and Keith Pelley has said we wanted somebody that's, you know, a little bit analytics driven. Is John Chyka that driven by analytics? I don't know. And so we're going to have to wait and see. That to me is part of what's gone on and how it's going to play out over the next little while. And then it's going to be
the analytics question is, I don't think there's any question about the analytics with Stathletes and his background.
Really? Okay.
You don't agree with me there? Like he has a strong analytics foundation.
I question how he uses it, but the
foundation is there.
Just because he owns the company doesn't mean he uses it. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not convinced yet. And based on the people I've talked to, I'm not convinced yet. Okay. So that will be something to watch. I have a bias too. When John was in Arizona and I knew the people that owned the team in Arizona, my interactions with John were not very good. So I whether it's personal bias or whatever, I thought he treated me poorly. So I have a bias. I admit my bias right there. So from that perspective, is his time away from the game, is it going to be a positive? Maybe it's a positive. You know darn well that he's still young. He's a brilliant communicator. And the question did he manage up well through this interview process? So we'll have to just wait and see.
Let's get the question out of the way. The biggest question around this entire situation is John Chyka the best they could do?
Well, I don't think so. I would have looked at some more traditional managers, traditional presidents. When this process started, the name on everybody's list was Doug Armstrong. They did not ask permission to talk to Doug Armstrong. They never talked to the Blues. They never talked to Armstrong. So to me, is that something that is a mistake? I think that's a mistake. Doug Armstrong should have been communicated with and just to see if there was interest. I mean, we don't know whether there was interest or not. But I would have talked to Doug Armstrong. But I'm an old school guy, and I believe in some of the things that traditional managers have done in the past, traditional leaders have done in the past. And so to me, Doug Armstrong would have been on my list.
What do you think the learning curve is to getting up to speed? And Matt's is going on 2 decades, never been in management.
So here's the thing.
But hasn't been around the league. Just let me finish here. Hasn't been around the league in 17 years. And Chajka hasn't been in hockey in 5. So there's got to be a getting up to speed period.
I think Mats is strictly, at this point, is to buy themselves 2 years of public relations. I think that that's...
Okay, what about the Chajka side?
I don't have an answer. I mean, how many times did
you have big questions? You got Austin Matthews, big questions. You got the core of this team. You've got rebuild, retool. And Chajka, by the way, didn't have great success in Arizona. And don't blame money because they were spending at the end in Arizona.
Well, in Chajka's time there, they actually became kind of the salary cap graveyard a bit. You know, they took a lot of contracts on. So I'd love to be open and say, listen, let's give the guy a chance. Let's see what he can do. But I'm not very optimistic.
So why did they go there?
Hopefully we'll find out. Hopefully we'll find out. I mean, they did their due diligence. They interviewed lots of guys. I'm not sure they interviewed the right guys, but, you know, that's the way they are. Now the question is what do they do with Craig Berube? You know,
Craig Berube. If it was me and I haven't been around it for a long time, I don't make any rash decisions and I let it play out. Like to come in here right off the bat and start firing coaches, that's a bit excessive given where I'm coming from. Do you agree with that? Or do you think it should start clean?
I would start clean, but I understand your logic. I would start clean. Now, in getting rid of Craig, I have to have an alternative. And so finding the alternative guy, to me, is the real question. Who's that person that can coach this team? Who's the one that is going to be able to use this new information that is going to be coming down the pipe in order to make this hockey club better? And the club still has warts, let's be honest. So, I certainly don't think that there's a quick fix on that part of the team.
I don't think that this whole process reflected well on one of the most historic and legendary franchises in pro sports.
Well, there's a couple of reasons I think that your comment kind of makes some sense. First of all, so much information was leaked out along the way. So where did that come from? Can that be fixed? We've known for a long time that this organization is top heavy in hockey operations. How will that be fixed? You know, I can tell you right now that there were people advising management at MLSE that, you know, you got 20 to 30 people too many in your hockey operations group. 20 to 30 people too many. in your hockey operations group. You better do something about it. So we'll have to see what happens there. This should have been a day of excitement.
Yeah, excitement and celebration.
If you're a Maple Leaf fan, this should have been a day of excitement.
And what is it?
I think there's a little bit of shock. There's that old movie. Is that all there is? Or that old song, is that all there is? Because, gosh, there better be more than this. There better be more than this now. You know, I just don't get it. I don't. I'm disappointed. I really am.
So an Oiler fan walks into the bar and sees a Leaf fan up at the talking to the bartender. Does the Oiler fan go over and put his arm around the Leaf fan and say, "I'm with you, buddy"? Hey, where do you think the Oiler fan is compared to the Leaf fan today?
I think the Oiler fan would have to buy the drinks. but I think they're probably both taking extra shots and pointing to Montreal and pointing and saying, "Gosh, I wish we were like them," and then pointing to Vancouver saying, "I'm glad we're not like them."
and long periods of silence.
Silence. And by the way, there's no guarantee they're sitting side by side at the bar. They may be at opposite ends.
I need them side by side, and I want to know what's going on between the two of them, because there's more similarities than we thought there would be. And if one was going to be out, like, think about this a year ago, the optimism around the two organizations.
Yeah.
They might never get out of the bar if they look back to where they were a year ago.
Well, so here's the one thing I would say, and I'll probably get a phone call about this. We heard players in Edmonton take responsibility. I heard Leon Draisaitl take responsibility. I heard Connor McDavid take responsibility. I'm not sure I've heard a Maple Leaf player take responsibility yet. And
if you get a call on this, forward them to me, because I agree with you.
Well, now I'm worried.
No, I got your back, man.
I just think Edmonton, in Edmonton, Connor and Leon said exactly, they spoke from the heart. And you can't help but appreciate that. I didn't think anybody, when the Leafs had their exit meetings and their press conferences, I don't think anybody spoke from the heart. I think they spoke to protect themselves.
I'll hang out at the bar with you over at the Duchess. Markham.
No, that's too far. The Clarkson Pump's a good spot to have chicken wings and a beer.
Okay. But I'm not like stand up at the bar. I'm more of a high top.
Oh, no. No. At the bar. You got to sit at the bar.
We'll welcome our third to the conversation.
Bob will sit at the bar with me, that's for sure. Bob will sit at the bar,
and there won't be any silence.
we'll just do the listening.
It'll be a lot of fun too. We'll try it out next. Bob Stauffer is going to join us on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shen. Wings
grilled.
Face-Off Inside the NHL returns, taking you deeper behind the scenes than ever before. See it all from the star-studded Four Nations Face-Off Tournament.
Us against the world, boys.
To the adrenaline of the Stanley Cup Playoffs.
I'm scared of you guys.
With candid interviews and backstage access, experience the sacrifice, the rivalries, and the determination that define NHL greatness.
Just when I thought last year couldn't be topped, here we are.
A new season of Face-Off Inside the NHL. Watch now only on Prime Video.
At these stages where we transition into a new round, there's that balancing act where we want to look at what's happening on the ice, but we also have to reflect on different things that occurred from the teams that were leaving the tournament of the Stanley Cup playoffs. As we welcome in Bob Stauffer, and we'll pursue that side of it from the Edmonton Oilers. Have you been able to digest what happened in the first round against Anaheim?
Well, the first thing is you got to recognize what the opponent did. I mean, Anaheim was well coached. They gained a lot of confidence, I think, offensively from their power play. They used a lot of players. And they played a team that was compromised at center. And, Darren, I've said this before, and I remember seeing Jim Nill at the Hlinka Gretzky a couple years ago after the Oilers had beaten Dallas in six. And in game six, Stuart Skinner stopped 31 shots, and the Oilers were outshot 32-10. And you lose a series in six or seven games, and you're thinking to yourself, woulda, coulda, shoulda, it was close, right? There were opportunities there. As trying to evaluate it somewhat from a neutral perspective, but certainly with a bit of an Oilers lens, I got to give credit to Anaheim. And I also got to recognize that this was a year, unlike the two previous with Chris Knobloch, where the team never had a sustained run. Like two seasons ago, they went 24-3 over a 27-game stretch. They won eight, lost three, and then they won 16 until the All-Star break and then came out of it and lost in Vegas in a game in which I think they outshot Vegas like 16-2 or something in the third period. And that was in the 23-24 season. Then in the 24-25 season from the game in Vancouver on November the 7th, which sort of resulted in Vancouver sort of going the wrong direction. From like November 7th until we went to the Four Nations, the Oilers had the best record in the NHL. They never came close to having that kind of sustained run this year. You know, was it a war of attrition? Was it, you know, three rounds, two rounds, four rounds, over the last 4 years? Was there some bets that were made that didn't work? I think, and were there some injuries? I think they all factored. But I don't think you can be unrealistic and just say, take Connor McDavid for his word. This was an average hockey team that wasn't able to take the next step this year.
Bob, do you think that there was an attitude is, well, we're going to get on a streak. Don't worry. We'll get it. We will get on one of those rolls and then we'll be fine. Do you think that occurred? I'm not saying there was a malaise, but was there that lack of panic that, don't worry, we'll be fine?
I think that Leon kind of hinted to that, John, when he spoke. Yeah. And that, you got to elevate in the regular season. I also think it's hard to win. You know what? It's just hard to win. Like, I think back to the Vegas series in 23. Like, Colorado was flat out better than Edmonton in 22 when they played in the conference final. Like, that's one of the deepest teams to have won the cup. Like, Chicago had a really deep team in 2010 and couldn't keep that team together. Colorado had a really deep team in 22, couldn't keep that team together. I think the Oilers lost in the margins to Vegas in 23, and Vegas went on to win the Stanley Cup. In 24 and 25, certainly Dallas was favored in both series, and I'd assert to you that Vegas was probably favored last year. And the Oilers beat Vegas in five with Calvin Pickard starting the series, by the way, and then Stuart Skinner coming in. They played a lot of hockey. They had been able to elevate come critical times. Maybe they thought it was just going to occur at some point, and it didn't for a combination of factors. I don't know if there was, and I appreciate that you're not saying there was a malaise, but I do think maybe there was a little bit of a belief here. The other thing that happened, and it sounds trite because every team has injuries and some teams do a full, like I Stan Bowman could have gone into much more detail than he did on Saturday in Edmonton. You know, we know now that both Dickinson and McDavid, you know, read between the lines between what the GM and the coach said, played with fractures, right? In their feet / ankles, whatever. Those weren't the only ones. Like Hyman was clearly compromised from a, you know, it looked like a core issue from him. I don't know if anybody remember, but Bouchard got belted in game one. I mean, he got belted in game one. And Anaheim was specific with who they targeted. They targeted Connor, Leon, Bouchard, and Ekholm. And the Oilers didn't do any of that. The Oilers couldn't sustain a forecheck, but Anaheim played three defensemen a ton, and Edmonton didn't land any body shots on them at all. And so, you know, maybe they thought they could just, you know, elevate a bit come playoff time. I don't know if the group collectively ever really, if we ever really got to see what they could do, to even know what they might be capable of, because it seemed like there was always a couple guys hurt. And maybe that's just a byproduct of having some of the extended runs. And I don't want to make it an excuse. It's a hard league. I just watched a Tampa team with a great coach, a great goalie, great players, four straight years. They've been bounced in the first round, and they've gone 2-10 at home in the playoffs. Like, Brian Burke, never a truer word is said. There's only one Stanley Cup awarded. Lots of things have to go right. Lots of things have to go right just to make it to the Stanley Cup. And there's factors during the course of the year that can derail you. And once you're, I think, been around it for long enough, you realize it and appreciate it.
So the responsibility, where does it lie?
Management, coaching, players, they've all accepted responsibility, Darren, on Saturday. Like, you know, when you have Connor and Leon both saying, hey, we know we need to play better. We feel there was a regression with the team. Chris Knobloch talked about him doing a better job carrying forward. And then Stan Bowman realizing that, you know, not every move that was made panned out. Now I could, you know, it's funny how you perceive things. So I'll give you an example. The Oilers made a trade to get Vasily Podkolzin for a fourth-round pick, okay? I knew within the first week of practice that Vasily Podkolzin was going to exceed expectation because he's the first guy on the ice every practice. Well, the Oilers got ahead of it on Vasily Podkolzin, got him extended at 3 years based on what he did last year, and this year he performed like a $5 million player. Like, you're watching Vegas on a nightly basis, and Barbashev's a pretty important part of that team. In fact, I think I can read a bit about Vegas based on if Barbashev's going to look out, because he's like their fifth or sixth best forward, right? And so, you know, and so in Podkolzin's case, there's an example of a guy that has grown, and they had the foresight to realize, hey, there was something here. And they got him extended at like 3 years of $3 million. It's a home run contract for the team because he's going to clearly outperform him. But conversely, they made a bet on a guy like Trent Frederick. And Chris Knobloch, as the head coach, rightfully or wrongfully, didn't find a role or didn't see a role for Trent all year. And they've done an 8-year extension on him and just under $4 million. So that has to get resolved here carrying forward. So some would say, well, there's an illustration. Is that on the manager? Is that on the coach? Is that on the player? I'd say 75% of a performance I attribute to the player, and 25% is usually on deployment. So I think there's culpability, but also there needs to be recognition that there were some other extenuating circumstances that may have undermined the organization's ability to, you know, like some of my neutral friends that are, you know, fans of Edmonton, like, Bob, the team was beat to crap.
Yeah. Right? Like, that's where I lie, Bob. Honestly, I think they wore down.
Yeah. And they had no juice.
Yeah.
The Henrique. So I'll give you a stat. The regular season, when Adam Henrique was in the lineup, the Oilers penalty killing was at 80%. When you're running a 30% power play and the penalty killing's at 80%, you're living large with special teams. Okay. They were at 69% without Adam Henrique in the regular season when he went out of the lineup. And he went out of the lineup before the Olympic break. And that is when Edmonton really struggled. They were 4-4 and lucky that they weren't 2-6 in their final 8 games going to the Olympics. And they were not playing well. They were not defending well. And they were struggling on the PK. And I think what happens, especially with young teams, is if they get hot on the power play, it transitions to their 5-on-5 play. Well, that's what happened with Anaheim. And then the Oilers were like, we can't take penalties because Henrique gets hurt 5 minutes into game one, never comes back in the series. And there's Edmonton's best penalty killing forward and a guy at 54% on faceoffs, most of which are on his weak side, right? And that more than anything, I think, undermined their PK. And then Anaheim went 8-for-16 on the power play. Think about that for a second. When the Oilers went to the final 2 years ago, they gave up 4 goals shorthanded the entire playoffs. 4 goals. They gave up 8 in one series against Anaheim this year. They gave up four goals while shorthanded in 24 and scored three shorthanded goals themselves. They were minus one. They were at 94%. And so there's an illustration of just a subtle injury. People wouldn't think, well, stop, come on, Adam Henrique, you know, he's 36. Yeah, it played a factor. And therein lies the rub on, I don't want to make excuses because Anaheim earned it. And the Oilers as an organization are going to have to dig in and get better. But there were some, combination of factors that sort of derailed maybe what the team might have been capable of if everybody was healthy.
Leon's remarks on Saturday, I'm sure they were taken a certain way in Edmonton, and I'm sure outside the market they were interpreted. How did you interpret them?
I know how bad those guys. I'm going to ask you two guys. I mean, you guys do a show of a national scope. How would you interpret those comments, John?
We lost control of the show already, Darren. We've lost control already.
I don't mind it. I encourage chaos.
I could see some. Both of them admitted that they were to blame for part of it. Obviously, their injuries. You haven't mentioned Leon's injury because he wasn't anywhere near 100% either. But I could see some impatience in both of them.
Yeah, understandable.
You do have to, in reading between the lines, you do have to wonder what the summer brings. I'm not saying that there's going to be a coup or anything like that, but, the team better listen to those two guys. Really,
I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. And that's, again, they couldn't drive anything through the center position. McDavid compromised, let's assume, an ankle injury. We know that it was a lower body injury. Draisaitl said he didn't have the pop in his game
right
to drive coming off the injury. Dickinson, I mean, I couldn't believe he played. Frankly, both McDavid and Dickinson, as a guy who's on the plane and around the team, I had a lot of empathy for, how tough those guys are. And then Henrique was out. So those were their four centers to start mm-hmm. game one. And you know what? The Ducks have got some great young players, and they're big, and they're strong guys, and they haven't played, 16, 12 is 28, 20, I'm just trying to do this off the top of my head, 15 and 10, 25, 53, what did they play last year? 14 and 2, 1, 1 and 4, 8, 22. So that's 75 games over the last, 75 games over the last 4 years. Right?
I figured you were doing your income taxes there for a second.
So. Yeah. No, I have somebody that does that. Anyhow, and every year it's the same. Are they taking more?
Yes.
But no, I get what you guys are saying. And yes, they were not happy. And I don't think we got a chance to see what the Oilers could do. And that said, I don't think the Oilers ever got to near the level that they did the two previous years. They had some impressive wins. Like they won both games in Vegas. Now Vegas made a coaching change and drilled Edmonton here. Edmonton didn't have Draisaitl, right? Like if you have a healthy McDavid and Draisaitl, that's a pretty strong 1-2 punch. Though I might make the suggestion that I think in the future, the Oilers have to involve more forwards. And the easiest way to do that is just to play McDavid and Draisaitl on the same line. Like where, right? Especially with Connor evaluating things over the next couple. I think they got to find a way to embrace some of the younger players. I don't think there's any question that, like Darren, one of the things that Vegas has done well is obviously they're not worried about draft picks. They'll move draft capital, but they have a good development process in their organization and they brought some guys up. They had a good year this year down in Henderson. I've got some players that have taken a step forward. And I think one of the things under the Jackson Bowman regime, it's a significant step up from what it was before, is they put some money into finding and replacing the draft capital with NCAA and European players. And there is a little bit of a push coming from underneath, but you've also got to be open to playing some of those younger players. Because in an entry-level system, you have to have, or in a cap system, you have to have performance from entry level players. You got to have cheap players that are producing for you, which means they have to be given an opportunity to play.
You made note of the ailments that they were dealing with. So was it even possible that this team was going to go deep this year?
I mean, they played really well in period one.
But they
one,
were so hobbled.
Yeah. I mean, are you asking me whether or not even if they gotten past Anaheim, would they have beaten Vegas?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Or Vegas, Utah, whoever they were.
I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't know if they beat either. I thought Minnesota would beat Dallas a bit for the same reason that I thought that the Oilers could be susceptible. Like, I wasn't one of these. I would never sit there and say Oilers in 4 or 5. Like, there were people that thought Oilers in 5. I was not one of those guys. I was like, this is good. They've got good, young, strong players. They got a Stanley Cup caliber head coach. They got good assistants that know Edmonton. And the Oilers don't have a great equalizer in goal. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. And with respect, Darren, to the team that you cover on a day-to-day basis, there's question marks about your goaltending. And just look at the save percentage now. One thing I'll say about Carter Hart, when games go in overtime, that's when he plays his best hockey. He is lights out in overtime. And so, I think Vegas's experience played a huge factor in them winning the series against Utah. I mean, Utah was up 2-1 in the series. And in games 4 and 5, Utah was up in the game. But Vegas has, first of all, they're Vegas. They've got an expectation of winning, and they've got Stanley Cup, history with similar players. And they could get to a level, and Utah kind of panicked, I thought, a bit in some of those games. And then Vegas ended up winning them in overtime. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget game 4 overtime, the whole sequence. Yeah, maybe the right result was ultimately called, but the process was flawed as to how they got there. Like, you know, and so they got the big break in the series, and the Oilers couldn't overcome it. But I think you make a valid point. Based on what I saw this year, I don't know if this team would have been able. Maybe they could have given Vegas a run if they'd gotten past Anaheim. I don't know if they could have beaten Minnesota or Colorado. Like, Minnesota has been a hard out for Edmonton for the last 2 or 3 years, right?
I was going to say 5 years.
Yeah, like Minnesota, Bill Guerin's good general manager, and that's a big, physical, tough, hard-nosed team that's got skill. And now they got two dynamic defensemen on the back end, and Colorado's Colorado. Like, people need to remember, Edmonton went to the final the last 2 years, amazing accomplishment. Colorado got knocked out. That's a tough place to play, right? Mm-hmm. It's different playing games, and Colorado's got a tempo and pace team. The other thing, you guys, the Oilers are a completely different team now than they were 2 years ago, right? Like, you had Fogel, who was at times an exasperating player, but had some speed. Well, McLeod and Holloway had a lot of speed and talent up front, right? And so I think Edmonton's changed a bit, and they don't have the same tempo and pace in their attack. And they're going to have to reinvent themselves again this offseason to get back to, you know, to being closer to a 50-win team instead of a 40-win team.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and deal with that goaltending subject that Bob touched on. It's 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen. And he scores! Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
Teased it going to break. Was the conversation about the goaltending deserved, or was it overblown? Where do you lie in that?
This was a bizarre year, Darren, for goaltending. He had 7 of the bottom 10 teams in the league in save percentage make the playoffs. That is an odd statistic, right? Like, it just, And frankly, the Pacific Division was part of it because you got three of the teams that are in the bottom 10. Yeah. Vegas, Edmonton, and Anaheim finishing 1, 2, 3 in the Pacific. I think Connor Ingram probably exceeded expectations, especially given where he was. I'm not actually surprised given sometimes I just look at relationships and, you know, Connor Ingram's mother was friends with Chris Knobloch's mother and they're from the same hometown. And Connor made the most. He had a lot of work to do. Like he dropped significant weight being in the NHL on a day-to-day basis from his recall in the minors, which, by the way, statistically, it was not great when he got called back up. It all coincides with one another. Tristan Jarry got hurt in Boston. So Jarry's first two starts were good. The Oilers beat Toronto, beat Pittsburgh. The Oilers gave up goals late in the game, both games that were very frustrating, that sort of masked blowouts a bit. Like Edmonton had a real good game in Toronto, and Drysdale got his 1,000th point in Pittsburgh against Stuart Skinner in his first start. And those guys got the win. You know, Jarry got the win, and then he went to Boston and left the game. Edmonton ended up winning that game. They recalled Ingram for the game in Minnesota. Pickard started, and eventually it became Ingram over Pickard. And then Jarry tried to come back from the injury, and he was never really the same. So, you know, you can make an argument. Maybe they should have split the goalies off a little bit more. My belief is Jarry has a higher ceiling as a goaltender than Connor Ingram, but Ingram was steadier this year. So they're going to have to find a way carrying forward here with Tristan Jarry. That, you know, under the assumption that he's in Edmonton next year, that they got to work with him, just like they got to work with Frederick, right? Like they got to work with those guys and get it out of them. And again, I think Jarry is superior. Like Darren, I know you used to play goal. Jarry's a superior puck handler. He's got a great glove hand. I know Steve Valiquette, you guys have had him on. He's an outstanding guest. And he talked the other day on one of the Toronto shows about sort of the movement of both Jarry and Ottinger and why there's been some challenges there. I think they got to get that sort of stuff figured out. Yeah. I think Ingram gave them about as much as he could, but he didn't steal a game in the playoffs.
Bob, right? Bob, like the goaltending is the goaltending in a better spot today than it was a year ago? Or is it the same?
Well, this is going to be hard because everybody likes Calvin Pickard.
Yeah.
Well, we got to see what happens with Ingram. But I think they may have to look at going outside the organization to address this carrying forward. And maybe they need to target a younger goaltender in an organization that's deep with goaltending prospects. Maybe that's something that they got a lot of goaltending prospects themselves, but they're years away. They're, you know, 3 to 4 years away, right? Like there's one club in the East that's got 4 pretty good goaltenders in their system right now. So we'll see what happens here carrying forward.
Yeah. We don't want tampering here. So let's keep it vague. Let's keep
our broadcasters. John, I mean, you would know. Are broadcasters tampering? I don't think so.
Okay, so which team?
I'm not going to say the team. I respect that organization for having goaltenders.
I got it narrowed down to 16. So
that, brilliant on your part.
It's what we do on a Monday. So the last summer was the Connor narrative. Will the Connor narrative return this summer?
Depends.
On what?
On what?
Well, we'll see.
Because
he said he wants to win at Edmonton.
He said all the right things.
Yeah. So I got to, when I mean it, it depends. I got to see what happens here in the offseason. I mean, I take Stan Bowman at his word. He was the first person to speak on Saturday. And he just point blank said, look, we are still under evaluation. I think Stan is probably going through what happened, why did it happen, and then where do we go from there, and how do we improve the team? Because there's going to be and I do think some of the improvement will just come from star players not playing until June the 20th to June the 24th. right? Like the last 2 years. I think that's when we, you know,
And add the Olympics into that too, Bob.
Right. So it's just, I mean, Darren, I'm going to swing this back your way. Like, you're in Vegas. They have an expectation of winning every year. Okay. They won the cup. They beat the Oilers in six. Nobody thought at the start of that series that Aiden Hill was going to be the difference maker in game six, right? Like, it was a 2-2 series. Brassois got knocked out of the series. Aiden Hill comes in, and Vegas wins 4-3 in game five in Vegas and gets gifted a 5-on-3 power play that swung that game. And then Edmonton got a 5-minute major and only scored one goal with Edmonton's power play. And that was your Dreisaitl was unreal on the power play. I think he might have led the playoffs in scoring that year, despite the fact that he only played three in goal scoring, he only played two rounds. So that's in 23. Well, my guess is the Vegas Golden Knights had an expectation in 24 and 25 that they could win the Western Conference, get back to the final, and they didn't. And I'm sure they did some self-reflection as well, because that's what good organizations do. And I think right now, probably what Stan, but I don't want to, I mean, I'm just going to take Stan at his word. He says he's evaluating it. I think he's trying to figure out what happened and why and where we go from here. And you know, he's, the funny thing is, let's not forget with Chicago, he won the cup in 2013, won the cup in 2015, mm-hmm. and his two teams the next year got bounced in the first round. Again, it is hard, and it's hard to win. And I feel bad for Connor and Leon, for ownership, for the fans, that in one of the 2 years against Florida, they didn't win. But right. You know what? Credit to Florida. They found a way.
John, I was just wondering if I wanted to jump in there and respond to that, because Bob threw it back to me, or whether you wanted to pop in.
No, you please respond.
Well, just on the subject of expectations coming off deep runs, you hope they can continue. And Vegas did have an expectation to win the Stanley Cup the year after in 2024, 2025. This year, certainly able to win the division the last 2 years. So that factors into it. But there's a randomness to hockey, Bob, that we cannot control. And it's difficult for fans to get their heads around it, but it might be the biggest influence in our sport. Whether you look at what happened Tampa Bay, Montreal, Vegas lost a game against Utah in which they allowed 12 shots and didn't allow a bad goal in that series. So, and when you spread that into the critical times, it makes it difficult.
You know, 100%, and. Like, I didn't like that Team Canada didn't have Bouchard on the team, because I think if Bouchard had been there to play with McDavid and Makar had been there to play McKinnon, and I don't think Bouchard was necessarily right in the series, just so you know. I think he dealt with, like, he got pounded a couple times, okay, and played huge minutes. And everybody say, well, the plus-minus was bad. Okay, so what are you going to say the last 2 years? Like, he's the highest scoring defenseman in the league in the playoffs the last 4 years, right? But I look at Team Canada, and if they'd had McDavid getting the puck in phase, in sequence, right timing from Bouchard, and McKinnon getting it in phase, right timing from Makar, you'd have two lines that could attack with two tandems. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, so what? Look how much they dominated the U.S. in the final and lost because Hellebuck stood on his play. I mean, my response to that would be, yeah, but they didn't have easier games in the quarterfinal and semifinal because they couldn't score. And I think it would have improved the probability of them scoring more and involving more players. And maybe that transitions into the final against the U.S. Instead, the Americans won, and they celebrate and let them. But that's the game. And we saw it again last night with Tampa. Like, again, I think Cooper's a great coach, okay? They did everything but win that game. I mean, Montreal got two lucky bounces on both goals. The second one, give Newhook credit. He called a shot, right? Banked it in.
Yeah.
So now work backwards to the 24 Stanley Cup final. Game seven, 1-1 game. Puck gets ricocheted and hits Kulikov and stays out of the net. Doesn't go to full side of the goal for the tap-in. They come back up the ice. And, you know, Reinhart is a pure scorer and shoots through a Kulak screen and it beats Skinner in his 2-1 game, and then the Oilers poured on in the third period, chance after chance, Hyman a great look, McDavid, and they couldn't get one. There's your randomness.
Yeah.
Which is why, yeah, which is why I don't necessarily like, and part of what happens in Canada at least is you have markets that haven't had the success, and fans get in, and even the broadcast, like I think broadcasters or, you know, sports media type that have to denigrate other markets, they're akin to me to comedians that tell fart jokes. They got a lack of talent if that's the game they have to go to. And so I don't like, I look at Vancouver and they had a hell of a team 2 years ago and it's gone the wrong direction, but I don't think it's as bad as everybody thinks it is out in Vancouver. And I look at Calgary and they're starting the process, and I hope both those teams end up drafting the top three. Because in my world, all due respect, Darren, to your situation in Vegas, I'd love to see Edmonton, Calgary, and Vancouver be the best three teams in the Pacific Division. That'd be awesome. Like from where I'm from. Right now, it doesn't look like that's going to be the case for the next few years, because it looks like San Jose and Anaheim are on the rise, and Vegas is seemingly always going to be in the mix. I got big belief in, you know, George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon, and they make hard decisions on coaching too. Like that is, they don't screw around, and they can find players. So, but the point of this is, it gets further exasperated in Canada when you have a team like the Oilers that have gone to the Stanley Cup more than any other organization in the league since they came into the NHL, right? And you get gifted McDavid. You got two of the five best forwards in the world and one of the three best defensemen now. So, you know, and so there's guys rejoicing in other markets, and it unfortunately drives some of our fan base nuts.
No.
It's only pretty amazing runs the last couple of years.
It's lonely at the top, Bob. That's, I got reminded
of
that.
Is that what it is?
That's my pal Don Cherry used to say that all the time. Hey,
did you help Bob to the top? Did you reach down and help Bob to the top, or was Bob giving you a lift up?
Bob got to the top himself. You know, Bob is right there. He's at the pinnacle.
I just wasn't sure who was at the top first between the two of you.
I will. John, you know this. There are some guys, Darren, that don't really think they need any coaching still. I'm never going to stop learning. That's what I'm going to tell you. Like there's still ways you can improve. You know, I mean, I don't have much to work with. I'm not pretty anymore. I never really was, but you're right.
I'm glad you added anymore.
What's that?
I'm glad you added anymore.
You got flow, dude. You still got flow.
Yeah. Hey,
some guys were has-beens. I was and never was.
Anaheim got a chance?
Yeah, they do. Sure they do. But Vegas is the more experienced team. Vegas has a better defense. I think Vegas are obviously healthier than Edmonton. But Anaheim's going to be an intriguing team to watch, right? Like Quenneville's a good coach. They you know, like Beckett Seneca had a quiet series. Mm-hmm. He had a quiet series. He's got a high ceiling, that kid. And Carlson, he was good. Cutter Gauthier is confident. McTavish has had some up and down moments, but those are four great young forwards that are all 6'1.5" to 6'3" with skill and ability, and each a little bit different. And then Lacombe had an awesome series against Edmonton, but he also got 60% of Connor McDavid. He didn't get 100%. Like, he got 60% of McDavid, and the Oilers had 70% of Drysdale, 50% of Dickinson, right? And the Oilers' two best forwards in the series were Podkolzin and Kapanen.
Right.
And their best defenseman was Connor Murphy. And the three highest scoring players in the playoffs over the last, like if you went back to the start of the 22 playoffs, the three highest scoring players in the NHL over the last five playoff years are McDavid, Drysdale, and Bouchard. So that just showed you some of the challenges. But absolutely Anaheim has a chance, partially because of the exact thing that Darren talked about. There is a randomness to it. You know, it's just kind of how hockey works. And I think Vegas will probably do a better job killing penalties than the Oilers did. I mean, it was an absolute, you can't go 8-for-16 in a series. It's actually staggering that you think that, you know, they ended up playing 25 playoff games 2 years ago and gave up 4 goals against shorthanded and gave up 8 in a 6-game series. Anaheim scored in every game. And you guys know the game. You're scoring on the power play. You start to feel good about yourself. It translates into your 5v5 game. And then the other thing is, the one thing that Vegas is going to have to deal with is Joel plays all 4 lines. Like, what they got out of Tim Washey and what they got out of Paling on their 3rd and 4th line center, I think that highlighted maybe a difference between Edmonton and Anaheim. The Oilers had a chance to develop a couple guys further down the lineup at different stretches during the year, never did. And one thing Anaheim we have commented did, and maybe on. Maybe it's just easier to do when you're in Anaheim. And there's not the same day-to-day pressure that there is in Edmonton to win.
Yeah, right? Maybe, I think that's a factor too.
Yeah. You would know. I mean, how much pressure is, like, really? Because you lived in Edmonton and you grew up in Canada. Is there anywhere to compare the amount of pressure, you know, in a market like, okay, so Montreal's, it's an incredible market. Toronto. And then I've kind of put Edmonton next of the sort of, but in Edmonton, there's nothing else. So, you know, and the Oilers as a brand carry across the country. Is there anywhere to even compare that to what it's like for the players in Vegas playing there?
I'll just phrase it differently. I think the pressure is the same. The players, the organization, everything. But right. The attention is massively different.
Yeah.
So you can get away from it. You're not listening to it, even by two hands separated. You're not hearing about it. So I think that's the biggest difference for some of these teams.
Because the Golden Knights have standards in their organization that they have an expectation that they're playing. And I can appreciate that. And frankly, I'm not sure the Oilers were at the same place 3 years ago. And when I said Vegas, one of the margins, the Oilers weren't doing some things that Vegas was doing. And now the Oilers are doing some of those things as an organization that's closed the gap a bit. Right. But it's, you know, the cap's a tough thing to navigate and manage, especially when you got superstar players.
Priority for Edmonton. And I'm not talking through the eyes of Stan or the coach or the players, just big picture. What do you think the priority should be?
I think they got to resolve goaltending a little bit. You know, they got 9 UFAs. I think they have to re-sign Connor Murphy.
Yes.
And I think they're going to have a good chance to sign him. I think they're going to have to make a decision on Connor Ingram. I don't think he'd be too expensive. They got to see what Dickinson wants and if they can afford it. They got to see, like, you look at what Pittsburgh did with reclamation projects. Is there a guy like Anthony Mantha out there? I'm not saying, like, they made some bets here the last couple of years. Jeff Skinner, Arvidsson, and then Mangiapane. Those didn't work out, okay? Now, is it a byproduct that this is a tough place to play and you're playing, there's high expectation, especially if you're playing with the big boys? Well, just play the big boys together and balance your other lines out. Like, maybe that's what you got to do. I don't know. So, again, I would think that there's one great equalizer. We saw it last night. It's goaltending.
Yeah.
So I think you have to work with Jari. You have to decide if you're going to bring Connor Ingram back. And I think you have to investigate the possibility of trading for an emerging goaltender that's further along in his development than the guys you have. So I would look at goaltending. They're going to have a lot of their defensemen under contract. They're going to have to make some I would probably, like, I look at Kapanen and go, yeah, that's a guy that's been good in the playoffs the last 2 years in Edmonton. Like, he's been good. Scored the goal to eliminate the Golden Knights last year.
As long as he's affordable.
Yeah, of course. Affordable. I mean.
But Bob, we would have said that about Trent Frederick, too, and it didn't work that way.
Yeah, they got to make that work.
That was a mistake,
John.
That was a mistake.
They got to make that work. And that's on the organization and on Trent to make it work.
Yeah.
So, Hey, how good was that Montreal-Tampa series?
Oh, good. And by the way, just I'll answer that. The other thing is that you know, young Matt Savoy doesn't get it. We haven't mentioned him. He had a pretty good season in the end, and
he had a great season. And there's back to the process. So they need Howard next year to be this year's Savoy, right? That's what they need to have happen. So Howard's got to be here and play in the top nine. And get some opportunity in a second unit power play. Maybe they need to play their second unit. Hey, they're the fifth best power play in NHL history this year. So it's tough to argue with what Paul McFarland did coming in with the Oilers' top end guys. Obviously, they got to be a better 5-on-5 team. Like, they were minus 31 in goal differential, and McDavid and Draisaitl 5-on-5 weren't on the ice. Okay. In 22-23, that would be the year they lost to Vegas. They were plus 14. Hmm. Okay. And they were a deeper team. Yeah. I think the easiest way for them to become a deeper team is to play more forwards, more minutes, including Savoy. Like, if they bring Kapanen back, he's got to play 16 minutes. Savoy's got to play 16 minutes. Maybe Nugent Hopkins and Hyman play together with Savoy. Maybe you play Pekulzin with McDavid and Draisaitl. Maybe go down some path like that. And then integrate some other guys and have greater role clarity, which is something that Chris Knobloch did initially when he came in back on November the 12th of 2023.
To answer your question, the Tampa-Montreal series was electric. It wasn't the greatest hockey at times, but it might have been one of the most emotional series I've seen in a long time, and dramatic series in a long time. The only thing that might surpass it might be Buffalo-Montreal. Because Buffalo-Montreal is going to be exactly the same.
Do you remember the 75 Montreal-Buffalo series?
Sure. Unfortunately, I do. Yeah, it was crazy. You know, I mean,
unfortunately. Why unfortunately?
Because that means I'm old.
So you're experienced.
Yeah. But the Buffalo-Montreal rivalry is what is has been for a long time, since that year has been one of the great rivalries in the game. And it has, you know, it hasn't really been able to blossom because the Sabres were bad. And before that, Canadians were bad, but it is a great rivalry. And this next round that starts Wednesday night is going to be exciting.
Youth has certainly been served.
Well, that's the key in the NHL. That really is the story of the 2026 Stanley Cup playoffs. Is young.
Well, you're either fully veteran laden, or you've got these kids. There's no middle ground this year in the second round.
The team that's in the middle ground got eliminated, and that's Dallas. Dallas is one of those teams in the middle ground. Because they got some great young players, but their veteran players let them down.
They've had the same Achilles heel, in my opinion, for three straight years in the playoffs. Right side of their defense.
Yeah.
Okay? They have. And I don't mean to be disrespectful.
That's fair.
Right? Like, you got to look, like, some would say, you look at Edmonton and say, is the goaltending good enough? Well, in 24, Stuart Skinner had a better save percentage than Bobrovsky in the Stanley Cup final. Right. But the difference is Bobrovsky may have stole one, possibly two games. He just got blown out in a couple of games and sunk his average. Right. So, yeah, it's interesting. And with Vegas, I mean, I'm watching them, Darren, and they're going with Hart. But the other guy, Hill, he won you a cup. Like, he's been written off before and come back and been pretty damn good. So that, to me, is an advantage that Vegas has, right? Like, they got two guys. And again, Hart, for whatever reason, come crunch time and overtime. He's got one of, what is he, 5-0 all-time in his career in overtime games?
And nothing bothers the guy.
Yeah.
Like, he is so, he had a bunch of bad bounces in the Utah game, shrugged them right off. Like, just came back, focused on the next save. Vegas, Carolina, the only two teams back in the second round from a year ago. Like, big turnover. Speaking of what you guys were talking about.
And Carolina's going to walk the Flyers. Sorry, they'll win it. That'll be a 4 or 5 games.
As long as Freddie stays healthy.
Philly can't play at Carolina's pace. Carolina plays quite similar to Florida, just without the same physicality and toughness, right? Like they play hard press man on man defense. They forecheck and sell out, and Florida hard rims more pucks and double teams usually your left defenseman and tries to create turnovers on the forecheck that way. It's a very simple war of attrition style. And they have the skill and spots to back it up and score. And we all know at the start of next season that Florida will be the favorite in the Eastern Conference. And speaking of, it would not surprise me if Florida takes a swing on one of those Pittsburgh Penguin, Anthony Mantha-esque bounce back type performance. Somebody will sign in Florida at a relatively inexpensive cost to join that team and be like their 8th best forward and have a chance for a bounce back campaign because they're Florida. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lean into the rest, something that Edmonton is going to do as well. Bob, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate walking us through the situation with the Oilers.
Well, I don't know if I provided any clarity on it, but it's certainly going to be interesting to watch here over the next couple months.
No, but I'm concerned because that last couple of years you were always busy until the middle of June, and now it here is May the 4th, and you got nothing to do.
I still have a show to do all the way until July 3rd, John. You know how many shows I'm taking off in the next 2 months? None.
One. No, you'll take one off.
I'm not taking one off. I'm going straight you have permission through until to take July one 3rd. Off. You can and then take guess one what? Off. Then we're doing 4 shows out of 8 months. You two guys can expect a call. And the beauty is, the price point's the same for my appearance fee here for you two guys doing my show. It's awesome.
I'm here whenever you need me, pal. May the 4th be with you, my friend.
Yes. Cheers. See you guys. Cheers.
There's Bob Stauffer. We'll be back with more on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
Face Off Inside the NHL returns, taking you deeper behind the scenes than ever before. See it all from the star-studded Four Nations Face Off Tournament.
Us against the world, boys.
To the adrenaline of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I'm scared of you guys.
With candid interviews and backstage access, experience the sacrifice, the rivalries, and the determination that define NHL greatness.
Just when I thought last year couldn't be topped, here we are.
A new season of Face Off Inside the NHL. Watch now only on Prime Video.
There's a, if you go back to that and through that, there's some points made there that I think are very valid. One thing I want to get out there, there was some conversation about Knobloch's future this year. Chris Knobloch has a contract extension that hasn't even kicked in yet. Right. So there was never, ever a coaching change going to take place there. And I'm as confident as I can be in saying that.
Well, I kind of side with you on this one. The problem, and I think when you have a down year after taking your team to the Stanley Cup Finals 2 years in a row, you probably deserve a chance to dig yourself out, I think. And when you consider the injuries that this team had, particularly in the playoffs, there's time. I think there's time for Chris Knobloch to do what he needs to do. And the question is what's the relationship between Knobloch and Bowman? I believe it's good. And where does ownership sit on this? Where does Daryl Cates feel that they have something that's needed? I mean, I truly believe that it was Daryl Cates' insistence that Paul Coffey showed up after the Olympic break and helped the defense, and they played a little bit better on defensively after that.
Any opinion on the window of the Oilers?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer is 2 years. The obvious answer is...
Or is it one?
Well, one to show progress. One to show progress.
Do you walk him right to free agency?
I'll tell you what.
That's the conversation that's going to take place this summer.
Absolutely. It's, I mean, it's going to happen.
Is it one, is next year the most pivotal year post-Gretzky?
Well, the fascinating, some would argue that this year was that. Some we may find that out this summer too. That, you know, that if and that's why I asked Bob about the Connor narrative. Will it continue this summer? I thought Connor did a really good job saying on Saturday that, you know, he wants to win and win in Edmonton, and he's given them 2 years. And he's given, and let's be honest, he's given them a huge financial break to win in 2 years by not taking a pay increase. So my answer is that I think the window is 2 years. 2 years to figure it out. And you know, is there, at the end of the 2 years, will Draisaitl and McDavid feel that they are on the right track in Edmonton if they haven't won the Stanley Cup by then? Because, you know, there's been a lot of people on a national basis saying that the window's closed and they got no chance. I can't buy that when you have
not if they're refreshed and healthy coming back next year.
I think there's
outstanding amounts of optimism if you're an Oilers fan looking at it from that perspective.
Right. I mean health, you know, and is there a realization that yes, we have to fix goaltending? We have to fix goaltending. You know, the goaltending was not good enough. When you look at
it's the same conversation we've had for 4 years, well, 5 years.
Different management team now too. Different management team. So that's part of it. It's fascinating to see.
How are those two guys at the bar, the Oilers fan and the Leaf fan?
They've left.
They didn't drive.
No, they Ubered home. But they got into a shouting match about some point because some guy, the Toronto guy, said McDavid's coming to Toronto, and the Oilers fan got mad at him. So,
and we haven't even talked about what happens if Matthews in his situation.
Well, that's right. Well, and by the way, there's a few other guys around the league in a similar, like, what happens with Zach Hrensky? You know, similar conversation. What happens to Roman Josi? Similar conversations with those guys in their markets that we're having with Austin Matthews and with Connor McDavid.
Yeah. They go to a different bar though. Those fans.
Well,
we'll do a pub crawl and catch up with them all. You and I.
Oh my God. We better be taking an Uber too.
To the bars.
Yeah, that's right.
Or one of those rickshaws. Can you imagine you and I sitting in the back of one of those rickshaws?
The wheels would break. The axles would be gone.
Thanks for everybody for listening. If you like what you hear, let us know. And if you don't, I would love to hear from you. Suggestions on how to make the conversations better, who you want to hear from, give us a thumbs up and interact with us on 100% Hockey, wherever you listen to the podcast or watch over on YouTube. We'll talk to you next time.